Hey everyone, welcome back to the Hurdy News Recap for the week. In this one, talking about Comcast and how they have a new feature for your Wi-Fi router where they can provide motion sensing. So they can actually use the wireless router to track where you are or other people are in your own home. This isn't new technology, but being rolled out first party by a company like Comcast is disturbing on new levels. Also, SK Hynix and Micron not replacing RMA'd SSDs, expanding on the story from a week or two ago, where they're using the current crisis to screw customers out of replacements. Additionally, malware distributed on a mini PC, and Anthropic rolls out watermarks, and AI boosters are real mad that people, though they used AI, even though they love it so much, I just wonder why that would be the case. And of course, we'll have a quick recap on the events that I just did with Lewis for the tour for owning your shit. Before that, this video is brought to you by Thermaltake and the TR200WS Micro Chassis, a micro ATX stout case. It includes an optional 5 1/4 bay for either a screen or 5 1/4 drives. The case has a highly perforated side panel, a color accent front styled like other popular cases, can fit radiators and closed loop liquid coolers in the top up to 360mm claimed support, and a total of 7 120mm fan mounting locations between the top, bottom, and rear of the case. Max CPU tower cooler clearance is claimed at 175mm and GPU clearance at 365mm. The chassis provides a portable, highly compatible box for your builds. Learn more at the link in the description below. All right, so quick update on the GN side. This is actually really cool stuff. I'm trying to figure out what to do with the video, but we just went on a part of Lewis Rossman's tour for his Fulu Foundation, and it was awesome. So Wendell joined for the Raleigh event, which I went to with Lewis. There was a guy from the Fisker Owners Association there too, where he's working on some advocacy for people who got screwed when they bought Fisker cars. And it works as a great representation of why digital locks on hardware devices that you own are bad, and how circumventing those locks shouldn't be a crime, which it literally is in the United States. Like if you bought a car or maybe an LG TV or something and you circumvent a digital lock to try to take more ownership of that thing, like maybe you don't want it spying on you or something breaks and you just would like to fix it yourself. In some instances under DMCA section 1201, that can be considered a crime with prison time and massive fines. So we did a part of this tour with them talking about that. People came out, there was a representative from the district representative's office who came out to the Raleigh event. So one of the actual political staff came out, sat there for the whole event, and she listened to what we had to say. She talked to people in the crowd. This is why it's so important to like get out and do these things, whether it's stuff that, you know, that we go to in our space or others, but because sometimes people like that will show up. And although she did speak to us and she was interested with what we had to say, really what I thought was more important was that she went and spoke to people in the crowd to try and get a feel for, is this like a real problem, owning devices and digital ownership and digital locks and devices spying on you, you know, or is this like these guys are a little out there type of thing? And so it was awesome. It's gonna take more than one representative, but I do hope that in situations like that, you know, she can filter these. She seemed on board, so, and I hope that's the case. She can filter that back up to Deborah Ross, who's the representative, to try and push for the Freedom to Fix Act. Anyway, so a whole tour on it. It was great. We got to meet a lot of you. Thank you for coming out. I saw a lot of MicroSlop shirts in the crowd, and I would like to do more of those in the future because it's just really good energy, and it's like, okay, this feels like we're directing all this to at least try to do something. And a lot of people in attendance, most of them, I think, wrote postcards. The stack of postcards was like this tall at the end, to go out to their representatives about supporting the Freedom to Fix Act, which would help to give specific protections under law for people who are bypassing digital locks and artificial restrictions on devices for things like cybersecurity research, for right to repair. So if you buy, you know, a tractor is always a great example because it's something that I think a lot of people in government are more familiar with, and it's easier for them to understand because there's lots of lobbying for farmers and for tractor companies and all this stuff, so they're more exposed to it. So anyway, that's always a good example, but the point being that you shouldn't have to pay these artificial fees to to make sure you can use the thing that you already bought that's sitting in your house or in your field. And so it was a great tour. I'm really excited about the turnout. It was hundreds of people at the Raleigh event. I think there were 300 signups and something around 200 plus or minus, you know, showed up for the event. And that was great. So anyway, thanks for coming out. Also on the GN side, just a reminder to support our upcoming videos like the LG investigation, which is really getting big in scope, but in a good way. We've got these discs and disc cases on the store. So on store.gamersaccess.net, you can grab things like our custom 3D printed cases that we're putting Blu-rays and CDs in. Yes, actually, there are options with USB drives available as well, just in case you want an easier option to work with. But like this knob, for example, has got the clicky spin to it. We've been refining this. We have a new design that actually exposes the internal mechanism of it we're working on right now, so you can see how it works, which is kind of fun. And yeah, we've been working on these pretty much nonstop since we launched them. I've got a disc part two video coming out that we're working on. I think we'll probably be starting printing, the 3D printing pretty soon. And then the goal is to start shipping December 1st, maybe if we're lucky a little bit before that. So working on that still. But anyway, that's on the store if you want to support us and grab something cool in return. All right, let's get into the first story for the week. So following up on our recent coverage about how Micron stiffed a customer out of an adequate solution for their dead stick of memory, and then, in my opinion, stole their other stick of memory. There was some kind of resolution to that, sort of, but there are more stories on this. Micron and SK Hynix are now doing the same thing, reportedly, to SSDs. Reddit user AssignmentGlass5591 took to the PC Master Race subreddit and RMA'd his defective Crucial X10 Pro 4TB SSD. A rep responded via email, which has been machine translated to read, quote, due to Crucial's closure, production of all components, including portable SSDs, M.2 NVMe SSDs, etc., has ceased. Consequently, our inventory is depleted. That's convenient. Therefore, our only option is to refund your purchase price, end quote. This would amount to around 230 euros. The same drive today costs around 410 euros. Fuck that. That's below the replacement price, which these companies know damn well about, because when they're selling old inventory, not that there's much old inventory these days, they don't necessarily set the price based on the original purchase price. They're setting it based on the replacement price because they need to buy more inventory to keep selling it. There's kind of a, you know, there's a level of reasonableness there. It's very easy to get into unreasonableness, though. And when you're doing it the other way, that is unreasonable, where the customer is not getting the replacement price value, even for first party pricing of the product, and yet the company is going to sell the older inventory at the replacement cost value. It's so unbelievably fucked. Last time I talked about this, where it's just like, I have to read through, we got so many emails about this stuff happening, and I'm going to read through them. I probably need to do it this weekend, but I put out a note there where if anyone wants to sue one of these companies in the US for one of these situations, especially where it's like they've stolen the thing that you sent in, as we talked about last time, in my opinion of what happened there, I am willing to fund the first $10,000 of your legal fees. Even easier if you're in North Carolina, where I can find you like a lawyer to connect you with to go through the consumer protection routes. But anyway, that's something we talked about in the last one. And we got a lot of emails. I got to read through them. I'm sure we'll have a lot of follow-ups on that as soon as I can kind of parse everything we got. Thank you for the patience. If you did email us, though, it's a lot. So they're doing this to a lot of people, is my point, from what I can see. And this is just, it's as a reminder, Crucial is owned by Micron. Micron's margin on consumer product in their latest earnings report, I think it was operating margins, like 86% on consumer, on what's left of it after shuttering Crucial. 86%. You could have so many device failures and RMA issues and still be profitable on a batch of products when your margin is 86%. Possibly even on a one-to-one scale, they can stay profitable depending on the cost of the replacement inventory at the time they bought it. So this is, Micron claimed it would support consumers after shuttering Crucial. We knew, and everyone else knew, that would not be the case. And continually, we see that it wasn't. They failed on the promise. They're trying to get out of supporting these devices, even though Micron's margin would support the replacement of the device. Like, the RMA rate can't be that high. This is giving me other concerns about Micron's quality, where if they have to not only reject a replacement, but not refund the replacement cost of the product, That tells me that their RMA rate is high enough that it is unprofitable to adequately support the consumer, which would mean that they have a very high failure rate. I don't think that's the case. I think it's probably pretty low, but that's what they're signaling. And that's really what I would love for the shareholders to hear that message, because that is the message they're putting out. But anyway, wanting to get a replacement drive, the Reddit user explains, quote, "I tell them I don't even need the portable version. Just send me a bare internal M.2 drive from your current lineup," end quote. And I was told, quote, "Due to the closure of Crucial, the production of all components, including portable SSDs and M.2 NVMe SSDs, has been discontinued. The stock is therefore exhausted. Since your case has already been forwarded to the top department, further escalation is unfortunately not possible," end quote. Now, this was so baffling to me that we sent a special reporter in to obtain internal training videos from Micron. That's right. These are the training videos that Micron gives their customer service reps for how to deal with customers.
You know, a lot of people ask why. Why treat the customer this way? Why? Because fuck them, that's why.
Micron's not alone. SK Hynix appears to have a similar policy. Reddit user AlexVaz29 submitted a warranty claim to the company and was told, quote, "We are pleased to inform you that your warranty claim has been approved. As a replacement unit is currently unavailable, we will issue a refund for the original purchase price once we receive the defective product. Please note that the customer is responsible for the shipping cost of returning the defective item," end quote. Absolutely not. That is not how that works. If you sold a product and they paid for the product and the shipping one time already, and that product doesn't work, they haven't gotten the thing that they bought. The company is responsible for all of it because the product was never delivered. A defect was delivered. That's not the product that was purchased. The shipping gets paid for by the company. Fuck that shit. Say no to that. And that's something you can take that to small claims. We were talking about this with Lewis at the event yesterday, and one of the points he was telling me about with some of the people who've come up to speak to him was be annoying to these companies, because the stupid ones, the stupid companies, will actually go through the small claims court fights and spend a ton of money and then lose anyway. So this is something where that's why that court exists. It is obnoxious, and for a lot of people, it's probably not worth all the headache to spend that time to fight that fight when you can just be like, fuck it, I'll pay $20 on the shipping, I'll send it in, and at least I can just move on with my life. I get that. 100%, I would probably do the same a lot of the time, depending on how much time I have and how many videos I want to make. But if you're someone where you're on principle, you're not willing to take that answer of pay for shipping, this is where really like people can make a big difference, is by being annoying when you have a legal right to something. And being annoying to me means something like small claims, or like pushing back on them repeatedly and asking for escalation because you're not willing to pay that money. And if that means you threaten them and say, I'm gonna bring this to media, then go for it. Send us your case and all the documentation. It needs to be clear, concise, like as short as possible, condensed. You know, if it really helps us if you take a lot of the emotion out of it, so that when we read the sort of synopsis of it, I get a really fast picture of, okay, what can I do? How can I work with this evidence to put something together? Because normally I'm looking for like raw evidence, raw statements of fact, screenshots or email logs with customer reps. And then we can kind of form, you know, the opinion on it and figure out what to do with it. But if that's what you need to do, do it. I can't reply to all of them. I'll do my best, obviously, to take at least a couple of those types of things or compile them all into a video. But the point is, like, it's just so unacceptable to not, if the product doesn't work, they pay for the shipping, has always been my stance on it. But neither Micron nor SK Hynix, two of only three top NAND flash memory manufacturers in the world, the top ones, say that they can replace a single SSD for one of their customers. So in fact, it seems an awful like they're trying to reduce the replacements so that they can sell those to enterprise, or so that they can, it's basically treating it as like a, it's almost like they're treating the inventory they had sold you previously as a form of investment, or like it's like a bond. It's like a government bond at that point where they've sold you a thing and they're going to give you back the money that you gave them later, the same money, even though inflation has driven the value down and the cost of the components has gone up, so that they can then keep kind of that inventory to then go sell to someone else for twice what they sold it to you previously. That's kind of what it feels like to me. Anyway, we have some actual footage of what both companies' RMA departments look like when you send in a device for repair or warranty. Here's a clip of the inside. I kind of go like really off script with these specific issues. The warranty ones for Micron and Hynix have been driving me up a wall lately because it's so, these companies are profiting billions of dollars. It's like, it is so unreasonable to, there can't be that many customers who have RMAs, hopefully, you'd hope. And they've decided that even the PR damage from this isn't worth it because you're not the customer anymore, so what do they care? As long as the enterprise guys don't see this and go, oh, I hope that doesn't happen to us in a warranty claim, which it won't, then they'll keep doing it. Anyway, up next, Comcast, turning your routers into motion sensing devices in your house. Is this like that meme, like the Mom, I want Flock, and no, we have Flock at home, and this is the Flock at home is actually just your router from Comcast. Wi-Fi sensing isn't new technology, but has gotten a lot better known lately. The concept is that you can use radio frequency to sense movement within a building. Per Wikipedia's definition, quote, Wi-Fi sensing, also referred to as WLAN sensing or 802.11bf, is a technology that uses existing Wi-Fi signals for the purpose of detecting events or changes such as motion, gesture recognition, and biometric measurements, e.g. breathing. Wi-Fi sensing allows for the utilization of conventional Wi-Fi transceiver hardware and radio frequency RF spectrum for both communications and sensing purposes, end quote. So there's videos on YouTube of people showing how this works. It's an interesting technology, but it's terrifying. And it's not new. It's just gotten a lot more coverage lately because of stuff like this with Comcast. So as an example, if outside entities had access to this motion sensing information, such as, I don't know, your internet service provider that's providing the router or the router provider, they'd be able to know which rooms you're in, possibly what you're doing by looking at sort of what's the status of the sort of the waves of they've represented a body in space. So maybe it's, oh, it seems like this particular user goes in what looks like it might be a kitchen to eat X many times a day. You could probably figure out someone's body type if you had sufficient data from how the RF interacts with the different bodies around the household. That might be useful information. You could see how that would be valuable, for example, with health insurance company advertising, things like that. Maybe you could look at how long they spend laying down or sitting versus standing or moving, how long they spend in the house, when they leave for work, when they come back from work, how long their lunch break is if they work at home. All these things are really valuable information. And that's kind of the direction we're going with Wi-Fi sensing, where they could possibly build effectively a heat signature of your movement around your own home, how many guests you have, when they come over, and things of that nature. So this is a concerning technology, and this is also something that since pretty much every public business, roadways now in some cities and states have wireless routers on things like street poles, like in cities, to try to provide a downtown network of Wi-Fi, which the ISPs are responsible for in most instances. So if you're already working with AT&T or whatever, maybe it just automatically works. That's all valuable information. You can use Wi-Fi sensing on that feasibly. You can obviously monitor the data, the traffic that goes through it, and use that for things. So anyway, this is something that could be coupled into, in the best case scenario, unbelievably targeted advertising that pairs well with devices like LG TVs or like phones, your car, and then it could be ingested into, in the worst cases, AI engines that know everything about you and your life. Now, Comcast says this is a feature you opt into. We say, for now. Comcast says its new Wi-Fi motion feature uses Xfinity gateways and connected devices to detect motion inside your home. According to the company, it does this by detecting, quote, changes in the home's radio frequency signal between the Xfinity gateway and a Wi-Fi connected device, end quote. Comcast calls it Xfinity Shield and is trying to bill it as home protection. Basically, it's being looked at as a motion sensor replacement for a security system or something. Difference is, with security systems, you can buy those things individually, part them out and own them, and connect them through a closed circuit solution. And likewise, the security system, hopefully if you've set it up in a way that's a little more secure, is not something that's fed directly through and connected directly with your ISP account, because they have a lot of data on you. So if you don't go through a VPN especially, then obviously combining the data from your web browsing activities to the data with your home motion activity, that becomes pretty prying. Comcast says that Xfinity Shield will transform Wi-Fi into, quote, an always-on protection via the Xfinity Gateway, end quote. Great. So it's always on. They say it doesn't add cost for existing customers, but they have, quote, AI-enhanced monitoring and access to emergency services for $15 per month, end quote. In fact, they reference AI a lot in this write-up, which should concern people. Quote, leverages AI capabilities embedded across the nation's largest converged network. Protecting the home extends beyond cybersecurity. Customers today often juggle separate expensive solutions for digital security, home monitoring, and family safety. Xfinity Shield addresses this fragmentation by bringing these capabilities together in a new product suite, managed through one simple experience in the Xfinity app. End quote. The marketing claims that it uses Wi-Fi motion to detect motion inside the home. That's a quote. And without using cameras, leveraging RF changes. Actually, Wendell's in town and will be here in 8 minutes. I'm going to be a little bit late. I got a little more than that film, but hopefully not more than 10 minutes late. Wendell's going to be here soon, and we're going to film something on that, so you can check back for that. I'm going to read a little faster now because of what I just said. Anthropic has added watermarks to Claude results, and AI boosters have absolutely lost it. I love it. To comply with the EU's AI Act, on August 14th, Anthropic announced it would be introducing watermarks that would identify whether content was produced using Claude. On its blog, the company wrote, quote, this is a way of determining the likelihood that Claude was involved in writing the text, end quote. Anthropic says other major AI companies have signed the EU Code of Practice and plan to implement their own watermarks. While its watermark system was created to comply with EU law, the company writes, quote, we're applying watermarking globally at launch because we don't yet have a durable way to scope it by region, end quote. For images, Anthropic will add a cryptographically signed note to the file's metadata indicating whether Claude created or edited it. And Claude users are not happy about this change. Business Insider reports that users are canceling their subscriptions as a result. One user said they were uncomfortable with the watermarks. Aw, uncomfortable with the watermarks. That's cute. I'm uncomfortable with all of my personal data, my emails, my documents stored in online cloud service providers, the content I've published over the last 18 years being stolen and consumed by LLMs to then reproduce my work to help create the responses that these boosters love so much. I would say I'm also uncomfortable. Another user said, quote, even if you edit your own work that you write, they add the watermark anyway, end quote. If it's work that Claude spit out, it's not work you wrote. That's not what that means. It's editing Claude's work, which is other people's work. One user created a comic titled, Our Data, Anthropic's Mark? Question mark, depicting Claude leaving its fingerprints everywhere. But that's, again, what these lunatics get wrong. Like, it's one thing if you want to use Claude or ChatGPT or whatever, but to pretend that it's, quote, our data, end quote, it's not. It's not even Anthropic's data. It's the world's data, sometimes individual people specifically, and it's Anthropic's watermark. It's not the same as scraping from the entire internet and indiscriminately ingesting it to then apply discriminately, potentially, on the output. That's a big difference. And that, I mean, it's like these companies get to steal and abuse intellectual property. But if you want to format shift from a copyrighted work on a disk to some other format, and you bought the disk, like somehow we're getting into illegality there. But it's not if it's Anthropic and these other companies just stealing everything from the internet. Like if you download an MP3 of a song from LimeWire decades ago, they were making examples of some people for downloading and distributing stuff for music, but I guess it's okay now. It's interesting though to see that Anthropic was the first major AI company to announce these watermarks because they happened to do it right around the same time that the CEO of Anthropic's wife was found in the Epstein files for asking Jeffrey Epstein to give her money for an adult video company. She called it a, I'm gonna have to change one of the words here for YouTube, but a luxury adult video company. I just thought it was really interesting that they released this news about the watermarks at basically around the same time that was at its peak exposure too. Just like, let's bury that controversy with a different one. That's, you know, we can at least point to the EU for that one instead of Epstein Island. Anyway, speaking of surveillance, Apple is rumored to be working on AirPods with cameras in them. Oh, I got so much this week. Mac Rumors spotted a video within macOS Tahoe 26.7 release candidate that showed this.
With visual intelligence, your world becomes savable. See something you like? Just ask me to save it for later.
Mac Rumors wrote, quote, the camera on the AirPods will feed information to visual intelligence, and Siri will be able to answer questions about the wearer's surroundings and log information, end quote. So currently, this is a rumor based on what appears to be a leak. So it might not become reality. Let's speak, though, on if it does. So it's already a possibility that anyone with AirPods is actively recording their surroundings. That's a feature you could do since day one. You could do that with wired earphones as well. However, if that becomes a passive feature, as a passive feature, it creates pathways for abuse both by AI companies and by the individual wearers, of course, but also by governments. I mean, you now have a situation where if it's kind of listening actively to everything around you, if you're able to ask it, if it recalls it, I don't know, you go to a bank, there might be some pretty interesting conversations in a bank that you might be able to hear through your AirPods capturing everything around you. It can do that now, yes. But it's, to me, the distinction is it's becoming, if it becomes a passive feature where then AI especially can train on it through whatever data center it's all piped back to, and especially given the rumor of cameras being embedded, suddenly we've mastered the flock safety issue of what about instead of just the government buying and putting cameras up everywhere, what if we make it a product that people want to buy and then they pay us to put cameras everywhere that can move? that's where we're going. But anyway, unlike pulling out a phone to take a picture or take a video, it might not be as obvious to people around in public when you pair AirPods with recording functionality for video. It's similar to the new trend of smart glasses. Up next, Chinese RAM maker CXMT has been making big gains in both production and performance. May put some pressure on the incumbents who are screwing everyone over. Not to say CXMT won't potentially also do that, but having more entities in the mix should be a good thing. Via my drivers, CXMT's 17-nanometer DDR5 yield rate has improved beyond 90%, which is reportedly, according to the publication, around 2 percentage points behind Samsung. Not bad. This has reportedly improved CXMT's overall supply as well. CXMT got to DDR5 capabilities in pretty much record time to production, that is, and they were banned by the U.S. government at one point, placed on the entity list. It was briefly removed from the entity list, but then the published update that removed CXMT from the entity list was itself removed. It's not clear to me right now whether CXMT is banned or not banned, but that's because the Pentagon wrote a letter to, I think it was the Bureau of Industry, one of the bureaus for the entity list, a couple of them can contribute to it. The Pentagon wrote a letter basically requesting that the removal of CXMT's removal was removed. So I don't know what the status is now, but they've been banned and unbanned a couple times. My driver says that Dell has internally banned CXMT chips for its own products. HP, on the other hand, restricts their use to computers sold in China. Acer and Asus also use CXMT chips on laptops sold in China and emerging markets. On the performance side, videocards.com reports that CXMT has shown RAM capable of running at DDR5 9000 with tighter timings on CXMT's DDR5 6000 RAM that now achieves timings as tight as TL28. So maybe some hope on the memory side for another supplier. Mini PC company Geekum hosted malware on its site. The company confirmed this to Video Cards after the publication verified a Reddit user's claim that one of the drivers that Geekum had offered through its support pages on its site pointed users to malware. Video Cards notes that the support page has been updated at this time, but the malware is still accessible through search. While Geekum apologized for hosting malware on its site, it didn't reveal how malware ended up on its servers to begin with. Concerningly, the company also asked Video Cards to take down its initial post highlighting the issue. Video Cards writes, and we agree with them, quote, Geekum also asked Video Cards to consider removing the original article. Given the company's own confirmation that the malware file was present on its support website, we do not believe removing the report would be fair, end quote. 100% they are right on that. As for Geekum's public statement provided to and published by Video Cards, the company provided instructions on avoiding the malware by instructing users to, quote, not run the flagged installer and delete any copy you may have saved locally, end quote. I've got another just an idea I'll put out here for instructions on how to avoid malware. This is crazy, but what about don't buy Geekum stuff? It just seems like one fewer step, so I don't know. Anyway, they say, quote, to stay safe, please download drivers via the support button in the navigation bar on the official Geek'em website rather than through older links that may still appear in Google search results, end quote. All right, last story for this one. We got Wendell here. Oh, I did pretty well. He's, we'll actually be, I think, on time. Xbox has successfully made consoles that people don't want to buy, and now the company is teaming up with IKEA. That's right, to make furniture that people won't want to buy. In an Instagram post, the company shared a video and images showing what looks like a green X-shaped seat cushion and a chair shaped like a very tall control stick. It's the new Microsoft suppository device made by IKEA. You can expect to hear more about the collaboration at Gamescom, which begins August 26th. It'll go great with the Xbox price increases they've had recently. Because Xbox consoles aren't flying off of the shelves, Microsoft is attempting to recreate its past glory by working with Mattel as well to reduce a 3,509-piece toy kit of the original Xbox to commemorate its 25th anniversary. It's being branded under Mattel's Brick Shop label, not to be confused with the Microsoft Brick Shop, which made Xbox 360s. The toy kit comes with three dioramas that include Halo, Combat Evolved, The Elder Scrolls III Morrowind, and Psychonauts, the last of which is interesting because Microsoft recently released Psychonauts developer Double Fine after acquiring them in 2019, which led to mass layoffs at the studio. That's not even single fine, much less double. The toy kit is advertised as a one-to-one scale model of the console. If you like the look of it, it'll cost you $330, or about 10 times the cost of a used OG Xbox. We do have to give Microsoft some credit here, though. That's a creative way to get around the RAM issues. So that's it for this week. Thanks for watching. Lewis has got the streams of his events up on one of his channels, so you should go check that out. I'll link it below. I'm not sure if it's second or his sort of main channel, but I'll link that if you want to watch any of them. You just kind of scrub past. He has all the setup streams and everything, so it's not cut down, but you can scrub past all the setup and go to where we're all seated in the chairs if you want to check it out. It's fun stuff, and hopefully we'll do more of this. He's still got more coming up, so he's going to be in a couple places. Some of them, I think he's got one in Los Angeles coming up in September, so you'll want to check that out as well. But that's it for this one. Thanks for watching. Subscribe for more. You can go to store.gamersaccess.net to support us directly by grabbing some of our discs, or patreon.com/gamersaccess to throw a few bucks our way each month. And we'll see you all next time.